Next item will be a presentation by the Texas Water Development Board consulting developing the nature-based solutions for the flood resilience guidance manual. This will be via Allison. Allison, are you present? Or anybody?
I believe it's George.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. We had Allison on our paperwork. Good morning, George. I'm going to hand it
over.
Good
morning. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to present today. Justin, I think you're going to share your screen and so that we can see the slides that we have presented today. As we are getting that queued up, again, my name is George Fowler. Thank you for the opportunity today to present on the nature-based solutions for flood resilience manual that the Texas Water Development Board is preparing. The Texas State Legislature asked the board to help prepare its first state flood plan. And in the process of preparing that state flood plan, the board identified common misperceptions on nature-based solutions, their effectiveness, cost, and maintenance. So this signaled the need for guidance and more information about implementing these practices in flood mitigation. So the board wants to implement more multi-beneficial, resilient flood mitigation projects, such as nature-based solutions, to put into the next state flood plan. So to help to get there, to get more nature-based solutions in the state flood plan, we're presenting this manual to each of the regional flood planning groups. So the intention of this presentation is to educate the flood planning groups to better understand what are nature-based solutions and how they can be implemented. With me presenting today is Justin from the Nature Conservancy. The Nature Conservancy has been using nature to solve problems for decades, long before the term nature-based solutions existed. And in recent years, hazard mitigation strategies, especially for flood risk, have expanded to include strategic conservation and the restoration of our streams, floodplains, and wetlands, activities in which the Nature Conservancy has extensive experience and expertise in Texas and beyond. So TNC thought it would be a good idea to bring this expertise into a collaborative effort with hazard mitigation professionals like yourselves to ensure our flood infrastructure projects are a win-win for people and the environment. Next slide, please. So during our today's presentation, we're going to go over several topics with the intent of communicating how this manual can be helpful to your community partners, the folks who are on the ground implementing and planning flood mitigation strategies. So we'll go over what are examples of the nature-based solutions, what are their benefits, how to plan for a nature-based solution, and how the manual can help a project owner being able to plan, implement, and monitor and adapt their nature-based solutions. Next slide, please. So nature-based solutions, what is it? It's a term that can be applied to solutions that solve a variety of problems, not just flood mitigation. So for example, nature-based solutions can be applied to brownfield mitigation or carbon sequestration. Therefore, the term nature-based solution is an umbrella term. It applies to a lot of different projects that can solve a variety of solutions. We're focused in on flood mitigation. A nature-based solution that focuses on flood mitigation can achieve benefits that span distinct disciplines. So for example, society, economics, and environmental, usually disciplines that have been isolated from each other and not a lot of cross-pollination. A nature-based solution can rise above traditional barriers and solve multiple benefits within those historically distinct disciplines. So a nature-based solution also doesn't need to be a constructed project. You know, for example, a non-structural nature-based solution such as land conservation in a hydrologic sensitive area will control runoff and floodwaters. So when we present to nature-based solutions, one has to remember that it doesn't have to be particularly something that's constructed and put into the ground. It also could be policies, easements, and other types of strategies that protect the natural solutions that help us become resilient in the times of flooding. In this solution, we have a Venn diagram where we have three concentric circles. And in the middle is that type of sweet spot where nature-based solutions would find itself, where it can achieve benefits that transcend those historically distinct disciplines by being able to build one project or engage in one non-structural solution that achieves and touch benefits in those other three distinct historic disciplines. So for example, a nature-based solution can mitigate our floodwater elevations while providing a recreational asset that's good for social benefit and introducing a riparian zone that's robust and diverse. So right there, we achieve benefits in all three distinct disciplines. Next slide, please. So a nature-based solution is not just green and living and breathing and everything. It can be a hybrid of our traditional solutions and also some of this the natural elements. So I'll just take a look at, we'll start at this, looking at this exhibit and at the bookends, the traditional and on the natural side. So on the traditional side, think of a concrete channel. Usually it only has one goal, which is a hydraulic conveyance. Smooth it over, get the floodwaters out as quick as possible, lower water surface elevations, we're done. Usually concrete channels, they serve a great hydraulic purpose. And also maybe if you're a skateboarder, it might be fun going around in a concrete channel and using that as some features. But outside of that, not a lot of benefits. On the other side of this exhibit is the natural side, where we're using natural processes to achieve our flood mitigation goals. Holding back floodwaters, giving floodwaters the room to spread out, which usually lowers their water surface elevation, and also incorporates a more diverse ecological component, which has been found to have multiple benefits from societal use in terms of quality of life, also reducing heat effect in urban areas, et cetera. And what's new in this in the manual and coming forth now within state and federal agencies who provide grants for flood mitigation projects is that these benefits, such as social benefits and ecological benefits, have a monetarial value. This monetary value can be used in federal and state cost-benefit analysis to justify nature-based solutions when we're seeking those grant sources. So in the middle of this diagram is the hybrid, where we may be incorporating some concrete and also a natural process. So a biofiltration pond or, a constructed wetland, where we have traditional hard engineering solutions such as concrete, box culverts, or junction boxes or outfall structures. But we also have upstream the natural component that helps integrate our flood management and also our natural components for water quality mitigation. Next slide, please. So as part of preparation for this presentation, we have reviewed the state flood plan and identified many of the different nature-based solutions within that state flood plan to look for a common denominator. Which of these nature-based solutions or projects that incorporate nature into their solutions are the most popular? And most of those are channel projects and regional detention basins, which span spatially either a very large watershed or even small of an urban area. So we're seeing these nature-based solutions being incorporated into how communities approach their flood mitigation goals. And our goal with the manual and the board's goal with the manual is to increase that amount, communicate out to the communities that if you use nature, it's more resilient, it does achieve the same benefits, and it also can make a flood planning grant more attractive and more competitive. So for examples for nature-based solutions are floodplain restoration. These often incorporate a wider river corridor that slows down the velocities of our moving head floodwaters, reduces the water surface elevations, and reduce erosion. So we get to achieve multiple benefits. A wet pond, say on the right-hand image there, that it has a berm that will hold back floodwaters above the normal conservation level. So wet ponds are very nice because they have a constant water surface elevation that will allow for flora and fauna to flourish. And also when in times of flood, it has the capacity to capture that flood water, store flood water, reduce peak discharges downstream. Next slide, please. So the manual is set up to be Texas specific. There's been a lot of research out there on nature-based solutions at the federal level, at different states, different organizations across the country and globally. The manual is specific to Texas, and that's important because Texas is a big state. Texas annual rainfall ranges from 50 plus inches in the east to 10 inches in the west. Therefore, the climate and the nature-based solutions to work within these climates have to vary in order to be successful. So they're regionally specific. So for example, drought-tolerant nature-based solutions in the west and wet-loving nature-based solutions in the east. So the manual breaks down nature-based solutions by climatic area. It also addresses some of the different topographic changes throughout the state. For example, from the swamps in the east to the plains in the north and our mountainous regions in the west and hill country in between. So for example, in north central Texas, Playa Lakes are a nature-based solution. There are many natural analogs of Playa Lakes in north central Texas and how the flood mitigation benefits we can achieve for them. So for the lower Brazos, what's important through in your regional flood plan is that there's some connection between open space, rivers, and erosion. So for example, the Brazos project is an approach and a project and a program to reduce erosion within the lower Brazos River. And nature-based solutions can be integrated with that erosion mitigation in mind by building in flood capacity within those rivers that achieve the erosion mitigation goals, but also can help us achieve flood mitigation goals in the area where we do those solutions and also downstream. The manual also looks at rural communities, urban communities, and suburban communities. And each one of those have different needs for their flood mitigation goals, and nature-based solutions can be tailored to fit within each one of those communities, given population, financial opportunities, et cetera. So going back to the regional flood plan here for the lower Brazos, we see there's a lot of opportunities for nature-based solutions. For example, levee setbacks. So a levee setback is a solution where a earthen dike or a flood wall has been put up. And what the goal is to set that back, move it away back from the river. And the reason why those infrastructure may have been put in there in place is to protect agricultural land or something else. And that land use may not be there anymore. So the goal, the levee still exists, but the goal isn't because the land use has changed. So now is a great time to explore which levees can be set back while the landscape on the land side of the levee is relatively undeveloped. So for example, in Fort Bend County, Brazoria County, you have a lot of levees and then also undeveloped land on one side. So maybe if we expand the distance between the levees, we gain some flood mitigation goals. And often the manual will explain how to find these levees because these levees are sometimes not on FEMA flood maps. And that's also a very important thing to be able to identify where these levees have been built and forgotten and potentially can be removed or set back. So the nature-based solutions are synergetic with Project Brazos because we, as I said before, we combine flood mitigation with erosion protection, and the manual presents resources and how to thoughtfully design floodplain benches as an example of achieving erosion flood mitigation goals to work with the local geomorphology and the floodplains. There's a little bit of portion of the floodplain group that goes down boundary all the way down to the coast. So the manual includes coastal stabilization, nature-based solutions that buffer the coastline from wave erosion and also wave run-up and flooding from coastal storms. So as I said before, the manual looks at different scales, a rural scale, which often has a hard time to financially justify flood mitigation solutions because of property values or the land is an agricultural land. The manual discusses briefly on how to account that flood mitigating flood damage to agricultural lands can be counted towards cost-benefit analysis. And then in our larger communities, the manual goes into how to do urban channel design or provides references for urban channel design and how to incorporate nature-based solutions into urban channel design. Next slide, please. As I said before, not all the nature-based solutions have to be built. There are non-structural nature-based solutions, such as land conservation, leaving room for the floodplain so that the floodplain can expand and do what it wants to do. And then we have we try to prohibit encroachment within that floodplain in the future. And one thing that we discuss is that this approach is an important strategy for smaller populated communities with large rivers or small dry creeks. If we applied what we know now to land development strategies 60 years ago, imagine how many flooding issues today could be avoided. So applying this thinking to today's land development strategies will help mitigate flooding issues 60 years in the future. So why do we want our kids and our kids' kids to look back and wish decisions made in 2026 would have been made differently? So by using non-structural nature-based solutions to help plan for future growth, we will then help mitigate flood problems within the future. Next slide, please. Now I'll turn it over to Justin to kind of walk us through the manual and the synergies with the regional flood plan.
Thank you, George. Hello, everyone. Happy to be here. Thanks for having us. My name is Justin Kozak. I'm the Nature-Based Solutions Project Manager for the Texas Chapter of the Nature Conservancy. So the Water Development Board initiated this project to develop this manual because they're looking for more of these nature-based multi-beneficial projects in the next planning cycle, and I guess just across the board throughout the state of Texas. The image you see on the screen here is a snip from the 2024 state flood plan, and it shows that, you know, only 8 of the projects in that plan of the 615 were nature-based solutions, or at least identified as nature-based solutions. This is a little misleading. There's a category in the descriptions of these projects that includes percent nature-based solutions. And if you look at that, there were 202 projects that had at least a non-zero percentage of nature-based solutions for part of that project. And that's important because you get additional points in project rankings for having a nature-based component to it, because it's seen that those multiple benefits help chip away at multiple community projects, and that's seen as leveraging resources to do more with them. In terms of FMSs, flood management strategies, there were 58 in the state flood plan, mostly strategic conservation, some acquisitions and buyouts that were considered nature-based solutions. So we're presenting to each of the RFPGs, each flood planning group. You all are actually our first one, so thanks for being the guinea pigs. And we're just hoping that to introduce the manual as a resource, open up further discussions on incorporating nature-based solutions into planning efforts and project designs, and hopefully this expands to local efforts as well. I do want to note that not only through this manual that they're trying to promote this, but there's additional points in the project ranking. You can get 5 points by including nature-based up to 5 points by including a nature-based solutions in your project. To put that into perspective, a single point in project ranking can bump you up 5 or 10 places on that. So it can make your project move quite a bit in consideration for flood infrastructure fund dollars. And as we're saying, a lot of these projects have multiple benefits, and there's other areas that you can capture more points as well. There's up to a 5% benefit for a project that has a water supply benefit. There's 2.5 percentage points for projects that have multiple benefits. So if it has a recreational benefit, an air quality, or some other environmental or socioeconomic benefit. And then an environmental benefit gets you another 2.5%. So you can get up to 15% of your points through a nature-based project that addresses flood risk and has all of those multiple benefits there. That'll move you a lot more than 5 or 10 places up in consideration for funding. I'm going to step back a second. what was the water development's goals in putting this together? George touched on this a little bit, but I want to reiterate it. They wanted to synthesize guidance into a single statewide manual to support flood mitigation and flood planning efforts at all levels in the state. We're doing this to have a better understanding of the use of these approaches for flood, specifically for flood risk reduction. So there's a lot of general resources out there on nature-based solutions, from an international manual put out by the Army Corps of Engineers in the UK and the Netherlands, to some local examples, from NGOs to state and federal documents. But most of those are not specifically focused on flood risk reduction, and even fewer are specific to Texas. So we're pulling all of this. So this manual focuses on that intentional use of nature-based solutions for flood risk reduction. And these natural features and landscapes that we cherish in Texas have always contributed to community flood resilience. But nature-based solutions represent a deliberate strategy to recognize those benefits in our planning decisions and protecting those things that are doing this work for us for free, as well as to include beneficial functions of nature in the projects that we're coming up with to address our shared problems. The second main goal was to provide strategies and tools to communities and to regions that help address barriers to implementing these projects and challenges identified through our research. Being that this is a newish approach for flood risk reduction, right? And hazard mitigation, stream and floodplain restoration has only been a fundable activity or project type for FEMA dollars since 2015. So it's only about 10 years old, and like this being a strategy for billions and billions of dollars are available for in flood hazard mitigation. So there can be some barriers there and some challenges in implementing those. And so the manual seeks to provide insights in overcoming some of those common barriers to implementing these types of projects, and how to think about these projects and how to plan for these projects. And then finally, another goal was to outline how to integrate nature-based solutions into all phases of the planning and project implementation process, including regional flood planning, as well as locally community-driven efforts. This includes specific consideration on different natural regions across Texas, as George was saying, and identifying strategies, tools, existing tools, processes for planning and implementing these, and outlining how to integrate them into all phases of our projects. Being that we're casting a wide net, there's a wide audience that would find this manual useful. But the specific target audience we had that we wanted to be sure to cover is local government officials, practitioners, and developers. Right. We want a city engineer to be able to look to this manual for some information or some guidance on, capital improvement plan or for a master drainage plan. We want regional flood planners and consultant teams to think about when projects are identified. If that channel project, can we do a nature-based solution? Can we develop FMPs, or when we're putting together FMEs and thinking about how we want to evaluate a challenge, are we making sure that there's space to consider a nature-based approach to some of these challenges? In some cases, there might not be one, but we don't want to preclude the option of having a project that is cost-effective and provides multiple benefits and chips away at additional problems or improves quality of life at the same time that we can reduce flood risk. For a local floodplain administrator, this would be a good manual to look to reference examples of existing floodplain ordinances, regulations, policies, or incentive programs to kind of think about how we want to manage development so that, as George was saying, over the long term, we're buying down that flood risk that we have and making sure we're not putting more people in harm's way while maintaining a level of environmental and life quality for the people who are going to live nearby. What this manual is going to look like, we have put together this framework, which also serves to kind of lay out what the manual covers. It's basically a soup to nuts approach. The yellow section, initiating NBS, we're defining nature-based solutions. We're giving an overview of what they are, talk about how they contribute to multiple benefits, and really the focus is on the flood risk reduction. In terms of initiating a planning or a project, you would also are implementing a project, you kind of need to think about funding. So what are those funding sources that are going to fund nature-based solutions? And you because these are multi-beneficial projects, there are other funding sources that maybe aren't thought of too often in the hazard mitigation space that now you can leverage recreation dollars, public health dollars, water quality dollars that could also be used to leverage these some of these projects because of those multiple benefits. And then also, as I was kind of saying about floodplain administrators, also reviewing the rules you have on the books. There's a lot of times where specific rules call for specific things and they preclude the consideration of different types of projects because of that. So, you know, you don't have to mandate that people use these projects, but you really don't want to be standing in the way from it if one of these projects can be good for you. The next, the green and blue sections here, that's planning and implementing projects. This is where all this is where the sausage is made, right? These walk through, walk readers through setting project goals, engaging with stakeholders, identifying structural or non-structural nature-based solutions, the feasibility of them, design, construction, and long-term maintenance and adaptive management. There's not a clear divide between these sections. Sometimes a planning process will happen, projects will be identified, you go and go forth and put those projects in. Other times, there's a feedback between those. That feedback loop between those two sections kind of goes to that, that, you know, these aren't always distinct situations, but you also, as you're implementing projects, because these are a, this is a newish approach, we need to be learning by doing, right? We need to make sure that we're understanding this project as it goes in. And this applies to everybody from the project sponsor to the consultants that are doing this, to the folks who are maintaining and managing these living systems on the ground. Because nature-based solutions are living systems and they adapt over time to our management and our understanding of them needs to adapt with it so that we're making sure that we're responding to stressors on it and making sure that future designs accomplish what we want and are more able to stand up to, you know, the floods and the challenges and that they're being faced with. So how can a regional flood planning group fit into this process? Well, y'all have roles in providing educational opportunities for community leaders, both on types of projects and on funding opportunities. You have a role in recommending or even the adoption of floodplain management standards, recommending FMEs to flood mitigation solutions, recommending FMPs and FMSs to reduce flooding, performing or assisting in a benefit cost analyses. Nature-based solutions can be incorporated in all of these steps, and there's things to learn and understand about all of them in terms of their implementation. So what's the schedule looking like for this manual? We are in wrapping up and gearing up for a release of this manual to for public comment in late March of, that's a typo there, in late March of this year, 2026. And a couple of months after that, once we get those comments and address them, we will release a final guidance manual. It'll be published on the Water Development Board website. Couple other examples here, how to incorporate nature-based solutions into regional flood plans. We think this group is pretty familiar with the tasks at hand for putting together a regional plan as you guys are in the middle of your second iteration of this. Task three is about floodplain management practices, needs, analysis, and flood protection goals. We can set goals for nature-based solutions implementation. Some regional groups did do this in the first one and in the first iteration of the plan. You can recommend nature-based solutions for floodplain management practices. And you can see there's several places in the manual that have resources that can help guide this the thinking around this. Task 4A, identifying and evaluating potential flood management evaluations or potentially feasible strategies and projects. You know, you can discuss those NBS opportunities with local sponsors and help identify potential FMPs and FMSs through that. Task 4C, performance of flood management evaluations, right? Think about those co-benefits, right? Think about those other challenges that communities throughout the region are dealing with. You know, drought, water supply, water quality, recreational access. These are a lot of challenges that communities face or want to leverage or want to increase. Are there opportunities where we know that there's an existing flood risk or flood challenge in which we can try and, you know, address multiple problems in a single project? Guidance manual has resources on that. And then task 5A is recommending FMEs, FMPs, and FMSs. Right, making sure you're documenting project benefits, percent NBS by cost, and include the consideration of ecosystem services, co-benefits, those co-benefits and projects and the benefit cost analyses. We actually have an appendix in this document. There will be a conceptual, a worked through example of considering multiple benefits with the benefit cost analysis, a conceptual example of that for a nature-based solutions project. I just want to flag, because it's important to say again, there's extra points to be available for projects to move them up in a ranking for consideration in the Flood Infrastructure Fund. The most important criteria to capture that is the percent by cost. And now the guidance on that is that's based on engineering judgment. And so look to your engineers and your technical consultants for that. And then make sure you're thinking about those other multiple benefits, right? We can count other benefits beyond flood risk reduction in a benefit cost analysis, both for flood infrastructure, for state funding, as well as federal dollars. That's also a newer thing in FEMA, how to count those environmental benefits or recreational benefits or social benefits for these projects. And so there's guidance, and the Water Development Board is developing additional guidance around that. And there's guidance in the manual that can help think about that. So I'm just going to wrap up real quick here. Thank you for all your time. Just a couple of key takeaways, if you take nothing else from this. Nature-based solutions might not always be right, but they the right fit for a certain situation. But the thinking behind them and the strength of them is that they have more co-benefits than our typical monofunctional flood infrastructure. A lot of pieces of infrastructure that we put in for flood risk reduction is only functional, and it provides a lot of benefits, but it's only providing those benefits when a flood is present. In the absence of it, could we get other benefits out of that? Could we have this be an asset to the community when the flooding isn't there? So that's one of them. Need to be considering these up front in the planning phase before design begins. The argument there is that typically if you're just trying to tack it on at the end of it, it's the first thing that gets removed from that project if there's any sort of budget constraints. And to really do it right, you need to bring in people that, George talked about the multidisciplinary, and going across government organizational boundaries and offices and different tasks. If you're going to do it right, you need to bring those guys in early so that their expertise can add to your expertise and you can do a project right in the right place. And then that will help also with additional funding opportunities, right? There's a challenge of cobbling together funding or getting funding for flood projects. But if you can incorporate recreational dollars, if you can incorporate water quality or water supply funding streams or other sources of community funding, you'll have a more multi-beneficial project that is more imminently fundable and provides even more benefits for our community. With that, I'm going to wrap up. I'm going to say thanks again on behalf of myself and George, and we'll take any questions anybody has. And thanks again for your time.
Any questions or comments for George and Justin from the board, from the group? Alicia.
Hey, I'm curious how this is actually going to flow through to the point structure. You want more projects, give it more money. That simple. It costs more money. It costs more money to maintain. I would encourage you to add a chapter to help people understand how to keep their arms around maintaining these things, right? Mm-hmm. They have a better idea of what to do with concrete or riprap or whatever. So I think some of this assumes that people don't have a clue, and I think they know more than you know. Maybe someone dispelling the myths of like what's a reasonable kind of maintenance, because they're getting zero funding. I don't care what grant you're getting zero funding for maintenance. So helping people plan and coach up and understand sort of the long-term costs and maybe how to manage it to make it a more tenable mm-hmm. thing, I think mm-hmm. that would be a good deal. But and then you mentioned several times other funding. The reality is there's not enough points in funding for this, and what people need from the state, I would argue, are greater needs. But if you could put a reference into those other funding sources that you think might pile on, mm-hmm. I think could be helpful. But I appreciate some of the things George was saying, and it's stuff that we've said over and over in our group. We would love to pay for setbacks. We would love to buy conservation easements today to keep zoning coming in tomorrow. You can't fund that project through the Water Development Board. You can't quantify future lives. They don't allow us to calculate that. So there's nobody right now who will fund avoidance for the most part. So it's not that everybody doesn't agree that it's potentially a great option. Just tell us how to fund it.
Yeah. All very good points.
There is a chapter 13, I believe it is, in the manual that's dedicated to a couple strategies after the project has been built. There's some people who want to build a project and walk away. There's others who want to have a prescribed operation maintenance plan. And then there may be a third category of an adaptive management strategy where we'll build something, kind of check it out how it goes and its performance in a year or two, maybe change a couple of things, keep moving on as you go through. So there is a chapter that's dedicated to the hows and how to's for taking care of a nature-based solution so that project sponsors can plan their own monies and time to maintain these things. The goal with nature-based solutions is that once it hits that maturity level, it's self-sustaining. Obviously, that can change with a huge drought or a fire or whatever you may have, but that is one of the purposes of nature-based solutions, that it's self-sustainable and mitigating.
Sujeet.
Thank you, Anthony. I thought we had a regional planning group right there and trying to put this on the design side, which is way down the line. I'm really confused. I think, you know, maybe we as a group needs to say that George and Justin said, to get extra points, we got to put whatever it is, all the design should be in accordance with the potential TNC or whatever it is, the nature solutions, and be done right there, because we are just trying to identify the projects and you know, we haven't even gotten to solutions of what are the implications, but I'm really lost at this one. Thank you.
Yeah, we don't have much control over what projects we're pulling into the plan. They either qualify, y'all either recommend them or you don't. We don't really get to dictate how much of those, what those projects look like or how much are nature-based. So I would agree with you on that point. We could potentially, as far as our, excuse me, the performance of FMEs, we could potentially put into the scope of work for some of these FMEs where we do a focused effort to at least evaluate or the possibility of adding or infusing some type of nature-based solution to some of these alternatives we develop. So that's probably where I would see we have the most tangible effect on being able to implement nature-based solutions. So that's something that you can kind of put in your mind. We can discuss that later as we talk about the scopes of these FMEs that we perform. So
yeah, I recognize it's a long process getting to the projects in the plan and where they come from, and but I think leaving that option open and looking at it, to Alicia's point about the funding just not being there, we've advocated separately from this project, just as the Nature Conservancy in Texas in general, for more points for these types of projects. They cross a lot of Water Development Board's mission areas, and so if you're going to put a project in that benefits multiple of those projects, you know, additional points or additional, more importantly than the points, additional percentage of funding of those projects should be included. It's not much, but I will note that in rural communities get an extra 5% for using nature-based solution in the flood infrastructure fund. So that's additional grant money that can come in through that type of project, whether that covers your cost and depends on the project. You know, the maintenance is something that's very different from the, you know, our traditional infrastructure, which is kind of the set it and forget it until it needs to be replaced. You know, the maintenance of a nature-based solution, it can be quite hands-on for the first couple of years until your vegetation and other things are established. But then it kind of, you know, requires some monitoring, but can be established and run itself.
Okay, we have a hand up from Tim. Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, I was just going to comment a little bit in here. You know, this is a little bit of a challenging topic. But as a corporation, you know, we've actually done quite a bit in this space, and I think there are, you know, certainly lots of upsides to this. And oftentimes, you know, it takes land, you know, in some cases, or, you know, kind of a slightly different way in thinking. But oftentimes the nature-based solutions, once you kind of embrace, you know, what you're trying to do with them, you know, can in fact have more impact and sometimes, you know, significantly cheaper. You know, the, you know, when I think about the Harris Reservoir project we're doing, you know, we had about 2.5 miles worth of floodplain work to do, you know, to kind of accommodate the flow that was being displaced by the positioning of the reservoir. You know, and so we were able to kind of with a nature-based solution, you know, both improve a chunk of the Oyster Creek floodplain, you know, and then, you know, manage plantings on that, you know, that actually allows it to qualify as wetlands mitigation, you know, improved habitat, you know, kind of all at the same time. You know, in the end, kind of significantly cheaper than going out and getting kind of wetlands, you know, banks offset for, you know, having just, you know, delivered kind of a hardened solution. You know, to me, kind of one of the tangibles in this space, you really may be kind of out of a manual like this. You're trying to get folks kind of well educated on what these solutions look like so that you can kind of get a line of sight into where, you know, you might apply them. And, you know, the idea that they're not necessarily always, hey, on the ground type solutions, you know, the way that we manage rainwater off of buildings and hardened surfaces or leave them porous, you know, all of those things translate into kind of, or can translate into significant reduction in flood hydrographs. So again, I, you know, once this book is together, what I would kind of envision is kind of, you know, some time to kind of get familiar with what the solutions are and how they apply, and then maybe some goals around really how to promote consideration for them, you know, in the audience that we're kind of serving within the lower Brazos floodplain. You know, again, individual communities have to make a decision around what they want to do, but, you know, to the extent that you can provide information and give them pathways to, you know, arguably cheaper and maybe more impactful, effective solutions, you know, I think that's the way to kind of get more of these in the overall plan.
It's a good point, Tim.
Yeah, we're very deliberate and have dozens, I think it's over 50 case studies from projects spanning from planning efforts to actual projects on the ground across Texas specifically. And as in addition to this manual, we've created some support resources for it, and it's still in the development process, but we're going to have a case study map that, you know, you click on a point, it'll tell you what the project is, who did it, what, you know, the components of it. So it kind of originally in my head started as almost demystifying that these types of projects do exist across all Texas and all eco regions. However, I think the more powerful point to that is, I think what Tim was getting to there, is that it can create a peer-to-peer learning network, right? Oh, this person did this project. I can talk with them. Why'd you do it? How'd you do it? What do I need to avoid and do? And that sort of in approaching a project like this, or, you know, even the question, would you do it again? Because some people would say no, and others would say, oh, absolutely, I would. So.
There's no other comments. Thank you. Oh, go ahead, Ryan.
You have Christina.
Oh, Christina.
Thanks. I really appreciate the fact that you said that you're going to include examples and resources of projects. I just ask that you maybe consider, to Alicia's point, some of the maintenance components on that, because things look really good the first couple of years as it's getting off the ground and the design's good. But then when it comes to managing, especially in an urban area where you're limited as far as access or maybe development up to that area, mm-hmm. There are different types of maintenance needs and maybe specialities depending on the size of the municipality or entity that we would need to take into consideration as we develop those types of projects.
Well, we'd like to extend our thanks to you, George and Justin. It sounds like we're going to be bumping into these nature-based solutions more and more as the projects start flowing in. Thank you so much for your presentation. We appreciate it.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And I know we're all busy, but if you could, when the public comment comes out, if Alicia, Christina, Tim, everybody who commented, if you put those in there, the Water Development Board will see those, whether you're asking for more funding for these projects, whether you're asking for more guidance on that. We look at every one of those comments and consider them. So if you have the time, I encourage you to submit those comments. And thank you very much.
Thank you.